The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime. Hezbollah launched a rocket barrage against the administrative headquarters of the Golani Brigade in northwest of the occupied territories. Three naval bases in the northern occupied city of Haifa were targeted and one was hit accurately. Military and technical bases were also targeted in that region. Israel admitted to damage caused by operations against Haifa. Hezbollah also successfully hit Israeli troops in settlements and barracks across the occupied territories. An Israeli Merkava tank was also struck near a village in South Lebanon, leading to the death and injuries of its troops. Hezbollah has been carrying out retaliatory operations in defense of the people of Lebanon and in solidarity with Palestine as the Israeli regime presses ahead with its brutal attacks against civilians. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from the Lebanese capital Beirut with more details on Hezbollah's retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime.
Well, first of all, I just need to mention that there were reports coming out from the town of Arab Salim where the Israelis have struck a building, and it seems that there were at least six or seven people who were killed, and we know that it was a family, it's a civilian family, there were children also in that building when it was struck, and so this adds up to the number of massacres being committed by the Israelis here in Lebanon. There was also several attacks in the area of Zawtar as well, in addition to, of course, the continuous destruction in various different areas. Now, when it comes to the retaliations of Hezbollah, we see today a more diverse attacks by Hezbollah. We know that Hezbollah has also in one statement declared the targeting of three different bases. In Haifa specifically, there was the Haifa technical base, which has been targeted before by Hezbollah, was targeted once more, in addition to the Haifa naval base and the Stella Maris base as well, which is also another naval base, which is responsible for the intelligence and monitoring of the coastline specifically. And so we see that advancement and that upping of the number of operations. There was a targeting of a new base, actually. It's the Nishar base, which contains the gas station of the Israeli military. It is the main area or the reservoir of the gas that is used by the Israeli military and that has been targeted for the very first time.
The Israeli military presses ahead with its aggression against Lebanon, causing more death and destruction in its latest attacks, including nearly a dozen violent airstrikes in the southern suburbs of Beirut. The central city of Nabatea was also the focal point of the Israeli attacks, with at least five people killed. The regime targeted the Nabatea municipality, as well as the vicinity of Nabi Berri Hospital, causing some damages to the complex. Earlier, two paramedics were killed in separate attacks. The IOF killed seven, including five children, near southern city of Baalbek. At least six people, including three children, were killed in the Bekaa Valley in the east of the country. Two Israeli airstrikes targeted the outskirts of the city of Tyre, killing one person and wounding others. The death toll from the Israeli aggression against Lebanon since October last year has surpassed 3,450. Nearly 14,700 others have also been injured. Saturday has been deadly for Palestinians in Gaza as the Israeli military continues to pound the blockaded territory with more attacks. In one of the latest strikes, at least 10 people, including children, were killed after Israeli warplanes bombed a school northwest of Gaza City. Elsewhere in Gaza City, an Israeli airstrike targeting a barbershop in a Daraji neighborhood left several fatalities. Casualties were also reported in Israeli bombing of a group of civilians in Rafah, south of Gaza. The Israeli aggression, which began in October last year, has so far claimed the lives of nearly 43,800 Palestinians and injured over 103,000 others. Our correspondent Inder al-Bala Abu Bakr Abed earlier updated us on the Israeli strikes on the blockaded strip.
In central Gaza, in the northwest of Al-Nusra refugee camp along Al-Rashid Street near the seashores, Israeli vessels, military vessels, have wounded one man and killed another. Both were transferred to Al Awda Hospital in Al Nusayrat refugee camp. Also in Al Burayj refugee camp, Israeli tanks carry on shelling different regions of the eastern parts of Al Burayj refugee camp. The Gaza Health Ministry has just announced that over the past 24 hours, three massacres have been committed by the Israeli regime. 28 have been killed, more than 111 have been wounded. Moving to the southern part of the strip in Khan Yunis, a family home in Khan Yunis in the southwest of Khan Yunis has been targeted. One man was killed, several others were wounded at the same time. Also, in Khan Yunis, the eastern outer skirts of the territory have been heavily pounded over the past few hours. In addition to that, in Rafah, a group of civilians also, a gathering of a few people who were in the streets just like walking as any other people around Gaza, were targeted. Five people were killed. Also, several others were maimed at the same time. If we move to northern Gaza, there just three people have been killed in a targeting of one of the houses in Al-Shaja'iyya neighborhood.
Thousands of Israelis have once again taken to the streets in Tel Aviv demanding a deal with Hamas for the release of Israeli captives in the blockaded Gaza Strip. These rallies are being held for a year now, with protesters criticizing the Israeli regime's refusal to agree with a ceasefire with Hamas. They chanted anti-Netanyahu slogans and called on him not to be a leader who sacrifices the lives of the captives. Many experts believe the Israeli premier is prolonging the war to save his own political career. Israel had seen mass protests against Benjamin Netanyahu and his far-right cabinet way before the genocidal war on Gaza started in October 2023. The Israeli premier has faced multiple corruption charges. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has conducted fresh drone strikes against an Israeli position inside the occupied Palestinian territories. The umbrella group of Iraqi resistance factions said the drones have hit a vital target in the north of the occupied territories twice. The group reiterated that its operations are in support of the people of Palestine and Lebanon, who are being massacred by the Israeli military. The Iraqi resistance has also targeted U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria during the past month over Washington's support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. The group has vowed to press ahead with its operations with increasing intensity. The spokesperson for the Yemeni Armed Forces said that the country has carried out new retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime.
The Air Force of the Yemeni Armed Forces carried out a military operation targeting a vital target of the Israeli enemy in the Omar Rashosh area in southern occupied Palestine using several drones. The operation achieved its objective successfully by God's grace.
Yahya Sari also asserted that the Yemeni army will continue its military operations against the regime and maintain a maritime blockade against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. He reiterated that these operations will not end until the Israeli regime stops its genocidal war in Gaza and its aggression on Lebanon. Iran's foreign minister warns Western countries against the passage of any anti-Iran resolution in the upcoming UN nuclear agency's board of governors. Abbas Araghchi says Tehran's response would include new measures that would certainly make them unhappy.
We have no issues cooperating with the agency, provided that our approach, along with that of the agency and its board of governors, is one of collaboration and not confrontation. If they choose confrontation and move toward passing anti-Iran resolutions in the board of governors, we will respond in kind. However, if they pursue a path of cooperation, we will do the same.
Araghchi warned the IAEA not to get dragged into political fields, adding that Iran would continue its cooperation with the agency as long as the UN body fulfills its professional obligations. The Iranian foreign minister added that Tehran has stopped fulfilling its obligations under the 2015 nuclear deal in response to the US withdrawal from the agreement and the European countries' non-compliance. However, he stressed that Iran is still a member to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and would perform its obligations under it. Araghchi expressed Iran's readiness for negotiations on nuclear issues, but emphasized the window for diplomacy remains open as long as the other side shows genuine will. The IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi has made an important visit to Iran in order to assess the country's compliance and verification with what remains, in his words, a shell of the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. We have discussed the trip and its implications for Tehran in our explainer program. Let's take a listen.
Well, the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, has visited Iran. This comes after the U.S. presidential election of Donald Trump. Is the timing a coincidence, or is it for Trump to get a head start before he is officially in office? Well, the results of Grossi's visit so far are a mixed bag. Well, to begin with, the IAEA chief's visit of Tehran comes as Iran has remained committed to the safeguards agreement 100%, meaning under the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement, a key part of the MBT. Iran has cooperated with the IAEA and fully accounted for nuclear material on both past and present nuclear activities. A background check is also in order here. The primary source of friction between the IAEA and Tehran has been the U.S. unilateral push, I should say withdrawal, that is, from the deal, and the EU's fake promise of supporting Iran after Trump tore up the deal. The U.S. unilateral withdrawal was accompanied by unprecedented sanctions, illegal under international law, under the so-called maximum pressure campaign by the U.S. Well, Iran continued to abide by the agreement in full for over a year between the years 2018 and 2019 as a demonstration of goodwill and to provide the U.S. with a ramp. Instead, Israel and the U.S. responded with escalation, assassinating Lieutenant General Mader Haj Qasem Soleimani in January of 2020, and then the top Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh in November of the same year. Well, in December 2020, Iran's parliament passed a law expanding the country's uranium enrichment program to 20%. Iran would later reach 60% enrichment in June of 2021 in another attempt to force the U.S. into re-entering the agreement. Now it's November 2024, and Iran has again shown its goodwill to the IAEA Director General, Rafael Grossi. The Iranian Foreign Minister, Abbas Araghchi, who himself was a nuclear negotiator in the JCPOA talks, has said, as a committed member of the MPT, we continue our full cooperation with the IAEA. Differences can be resolved, he said, through cooperation and dialogue. We agree to proceed with courage and goodwill. And he said Iran has never left the negotiating table on its peaceful nuclear program. Well, the IAEA Director General's statements have not been that encouraging, like how space for negotiation and diplomacy is not getting bigger, is getting smaller, since some European powers are pushing for a new anti-Iran resolution at the IAEA's Board of Governors meeting next week to pile up pressure on Tehran. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, AEOI, has warned of an immediate response to any resolution by the UN nuclear agency against the country's peaceful nuclear program, echoed by Iran's foreign minister, who said that the ball is in the EU-EE3 court, willing to negotiate based on our national interests and our inalienable rights, but not ready to negotiate under pressure or intimidation. And finally, to have the U.S. announce that it wants behavioral changes by Iran after Iran's president's nuclear pledges, in which President Masoud Pezeshkian promised to resolve doubts ahead of Donald Trump's return to the White House, is very ironic, given how Iran is still an MPT member, is still in the JCPOA, and has not weaponized its nuclear program.
Iran's Defense Minister Brigadier General Aziz Nasirzadeh is in the Syrian capital Damascus for talks with senior officials in the country. He says the aim of the visit is to expand bilateral military ties.
We're going to meet with high-ranking political and military officials to examine various aspects of the bilateral relations between the two nations, with a particular focus on defense and military matters. Our objective is to identify strategies to enhance these sectors. Hopefully, the relations between the two countries will evolve in such a way that we can provide mutual assistance in sensitive situations.
Nasirzadeh hailed the Syrian government in combating terrorism, calling Damascus a major supporter of the axis of resistance. He also said Iran is ready to provide all means of support to friendly countries. Nasirzadeh's visit comes at the invitation of the Syrian Defense Minister Ali Mahmoud Abbas. The Iranian diplomat is set to meet with his Syrian counterpart and other military and political officials during his two-day visit. A rally has been held in the South Korean capital Seoul in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza amid the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the blockaded territory. The rally aimed to draw the world's attention to the plight of millions of Palestinian children who are starving to death across the coastal sliver. That after a new UN report said the Israeli military is using starvation as a weapon of war in Gaza. Our correspondent Frank Smith has more.
Another pro-Palestine rally in the South Korean capital. Protest chants demanding the liberation of Palestine echoed across downtown Seoul on Saturday. Many young people participated in the rally ahead of International Children's Day, November the 20th. Even in grade 5, Chun Shiwan understands the harsh reality of Israeli atrocities and the Americans' complicity.
We must condemn Israel, and when we condemn Israel, we must also condemn the United States, because the United States has been providing Israel with weapons and bombs and helps the regime slaughter innocent civilians. And therefore, the United States is also a terrorist.
Supporters of Palestine here were recently called in for questioning by South Korean prosecutors, just like pro-Palestine activists are targeted in Europe.
We are now living in an unprecedented time of expression of global support for the liberation of Palestine. Criminalizing our voice will not quiet it. Let our voice be louder than the voice of the oppressor.
The facts of Israel's atrocities cannot be denied.
A recent report by a special committee of the United Nations released on Thursday puts on the record what supporters of Palestinians have been stating for several months. Israel, through its indiscriminate assaults and obstruction of aid, is, quote, using starvation as a weapon of war, imposing collective punishment on the Palestinian people.
The UN report also said the term genocide may apply. International activists want to help Palestinians stay strong.
Palestinians have been resisting Israeli occupation for the past 76 years and suffering genocide for over a year. These demonstrations around the world will make Palestinians understand they are not alone, and we are together in fighting for the human rights of the Palestinian people.
More civic actions are planned, including International Human Rights Day, December 8th. Frank Smith, Seoul.
And that is all for this hour's news. Thank you so much. Stay with us for more.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
After a year of committing genocide in the Gaza Strip, an increasing number of Israeli soldiers are silently refusing orders to return to the battlefield, citing psychological exhaustion and demoralization. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has covered this story and tells us more. An increasing number of Israeli soldiers are silently refusing orders to return to the battlefield in the besieged Gaza Strip, due in large part to the resistance put up by the Palestinian fighters. According to a recent report in the Israeli news outlet Hamakom, interviews with over 20 parents and soldiers in a range of battalions have revealed growing dissatisfaction within the ranks. Hamakom said, after 12 consecutive months of a war that goes nowhere, the soldiers are black. In military slang, this means that they're depressed, worn out, and unmotivated. The Israeli soldiers say they are now depressed, unmotivated, worn out, and psychologically damaged, due to an unending campaign of death and destruction across the region. Parents say their sons are demoralized, having to return to places in Gaza where they fought months ago. A parent named Aidit said the return to the places such as Jabalia, Al-Zaytun and Shujaiya broke the soldiers, adding, "These are the same places where they lost their friends. The area was already clean. It had to be preserved. It frustrated them a lot." The parents, Aidit, said, "What kills them is the conditions and the duration of the fighting with no end in sight. You never know when you will get out, and it's been like this for over a year." Among the Nahal Brigade, soldiers spent 5 weeks fighting in Gaza before returning home to rest, something they have done 11 times so far since October of last year. However, according to the report, during the 11th deployment, only 6 soldiers of a platoon of 30 showed up. The others came up with an excuse. Inbal, mother of one of the soldiers in the platoon, said, "I call it refusal and rebellion." She said, "They returned to the same buildings that they cleaned, each time trapping them anew. They have been to Al-Zaytun neighborhood 3 times already. They understand that it is futile and pointless," adding, "Because they were a small team, they couldn't go out on missions. They just stayed there and waited for the time to pass. It was even more unnecessary." Another parent of an Israeli soldier in Nahal platoon said, "The wards are empty. Everyone who is not dead or injured is mentally damaged. There are very few left who return to fight, and they're not quite right either." The mother of an Israeli commando recounted her son's frustration. She said, "We're like sitting ducks at the range. We don't understand what we're doing here. The captives don't come back a second and third time. And you see, it's endless, and soldiers get injured and die on the way." In March, 4 soldiers of the unit were killed, and dozens more were injured in 3 different attacks. After returning from Gaza, the unit was converted to a reserve and sent right back to fight in Gaza. Israeli soldiers have been demolishing residential buildings with explosives, sniping children, shelling hospitals and schools housing the displaced, and destroying Gaza's water and electrical infrastructure. After Israel's ground offensive into Lebanon, in which the regime suffered major setbacks, losing a considerable number of its troops, a mother said her son told her, "I don't know what army they're thinking of entering Lebanon with, but I'm not going back to the battalion." Another Israeli soldier said offensives were being done halfway due to the lack of manpower, adding, The platoons are empty. Those who aren't dead or physically wounded are mentally broken. Very few come back to fight, and even they aren't fully okay. Among mothers of soldiers, the phenomenon is called silent refusal, or grey refusal. The Israeli military has published the names of over 750 of its troops killed since October of 2023, including more than 350 who were killed on the ground in Gaza. About 50 troops have been killed and hundreds more injured in attacks along Lebanon's border in recent weeks. The resistance front says the number of military fatalities the Israeli regime has suffered is much higher as it keeps the real figures under the lid. The website of Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Israeli military has reportedly warned several troopers that they will be prosecuted if they do not return to the Gaza Strip amid growing cases of such refusals in recent months. According to Israel's Kan public broadcaster, at least 20 Israeli soldiers from an infantry brigade have refused to return to the war in Gaza, where Palestinian fighters have put up a spirited defense against the invaders since October of last year. The report added around 10 of the Israeli soldiers have received official warnings that they would face trial for disobeying military orders. Some of the Israeli forces say they're unable to return to Gaza following months of combat, but nonetheless, they're ready to assume other duties. Families of the soldiers say that their relatives are forced to conduct ground maneuvers in Gaza or face prison. They noted, "There are only a few soldiers left in their company who are capable of fighting. This is our time as parents to help them confront a system that does not care about them." The development comes at a time when the Israeli military is suffering manpower shortages. Recently, Israel's war minister Yoav Gallant said the Israeli army needs 10,000 new soldiers immediately. According to figures by the military, a total of 750 Israeli soldiers have been killed since October of last year, including 350 in the ground battles in the Gaza Strip itself. Earlier, Israeli media reported that the regime underreports fatalities among its soldiers as a means of avoiding public backlash and preserving the morale of its soldiers. Israel launched this Gaza onslaught after the Hamas resistance group carried out a surprise operation against the usurping entity in retaliation for Israel's atrocities against Palestinians, which went on for decades. However, more than 1 year into the onslaught, the Tel Aviv regime has failed to achieve any of its declared objectives in the Gaza Strip, despite massacring at least 43,000 Palestinians, many of them women and children, and injuring more than nearly 100,000 others. Recently, Israeli newspaper Maariv warned the Israeli military is on the verge of sinking in the mud in Gaza. The Israeli newspaper Maariv said, in these black months, 10 Israeli soldiers were killed in battles in Gaza and the north with Lebanon, and this is the price of a war of attrition. For months, mediators have been trying to reach an agreement between Israel and Hamas to ensure a prisoner exchange and a ceasefire and allow humanitarian aid to enter Gaza. But these efforts have been stalled because of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's refusal to meet Hamas's demand to stop the war.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means to appoint.
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah,
is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed. His decree, though...
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Please stay with us. Today's tip: what is the origin of our inner diseases and how to fix them in our ubudiyah, our service, our worship, and our obedience to Allah. So, dear listeners, we are humbly at your service speaking about the origins of the inner diseases that we might have and, of course, how to fix some of them and how all of this is very intimately and intricately connected with our ubudiyah, our service, our worship, and our obedience to the Almighty Allah. So, of course, we must do a little bit of reflection, we must do a little bit of contemplation, and we need to look within ourselves first and foremost to see what kind of inner diseases, if any, we have. Now, of course, the first step is to be able to understand that we do have inner diseases, or we have these spiritual diseases. We have these flaws, these faults, these errors, or perhaps in other words, these sins that we tend to commit, or these bad moral and ethical behaviors that we might indulge in. So this is the first, and it is one of the most important steps, and that is this reflection to try to look within ourselves and, you know, really measure and gauge and kind of jot down and list these various things that we might be doing that, well, you know, we shouldn't be doing. Now, this is how we're going to come across and figure out what kind of spiritual diseases or evils that we have within us. Now, what's interesting is that when we look at the statements of the great Urafa, the great spiritual wayfarers and spiritual masters, such as Imam Khomeini, for example, or Ayatollah Taqi Behjet, or various other great spiritual wayfarers. And of course, if we look at the traditions of the infallible and immaculate Imams, alayhim wassalam, as well as the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, we will find that they say that the origin of these evils and the origin of these spiritual and inner diseases is our own selfishness and self-centeredness and self-conceit. So this kind of giving value and importance and priority to the lower self or the self itself, for lack of a better terminology, is the origin of all these inner diseases. And so it is this focus on the me and what I want and what I want to do and what is important to me and what is good for me. And so this kind of a focus and being centered around the me is what creates a lot of these spiritual diseases. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Khalil Ja'far.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Fa'a'rid an man tawalla an dhikrina ولم يرد إلا الحياة الدنيا.
This ayat of Quran draws for us a contrast between those who constantly remember Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and those who seek the world, and that these two cannot both be had at the same time. And the idea here is that if we have all the faith, and we have Quran, and we have Ahlul Bayt, and we have all the practices of Islam, the one thing that remains a danger for us is this Hubbud Dunya, which can ruin us at the last moment. The Quran gives us an example of a man at the time of the Prophet Musa alayhi salam. His name was Bal'am bin Ba'ura.
وَاتْلُ عَلَيْهِمْ نَبَأَ الَّذِي آتَيْنَاهُ آيَاتِنَا.
Tell them the story of that person whom we gave our signs. Some say his knowledge reached to such high levels that when he looked at the heavens, he could see the angels.
فَانْصَلَخَ مِنْهَا.
But gradually, all that wisdom and knowledge he loved, he started taking it for granted. It no longer meant anything to him. It no longer had importance. So the more we gain in knowledge, if we don't practice it, it makes the heart harder. And this is what happened with Bal'am. He began taking his knowledge for granted. It no longer had that appeal to him. And in its place, he began loving dunya.
فَأَتْبَعَهُ الشَّيْطَانُ فَكَانَ مِنَ الْقَاوِينَ.
The moment Shaitan saw that now he is impressed by his knowledge and he wants the prestige and the honor and the name and the fame and the rank, he has hubbud dunya. He started pursuing him.
وَلَوْ شِئْنَا لَرَفَعْنَاهُ بِهَا.
And had we wished, we could have elevated him even higher.
وَلَكِنَّهُ أَخْلَدَ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ.
The problem was he kept clinging to the world. He just would not let go of his love for the world.
وَاتَّبَعَ هَوَاهُ.
And he began following his base desires, his hawa.
فَمَثَلُهُ كَمَثَلِ الْكَلْبِ.
So his example is the example of a dog. Why a dog? Because Allah says a dog is always got his tongue out, panting. That is the kind of man he became in his love for the world.
إِن تَحْمِلْ عَلَيْهِ يَلْهَثْ أَوْ تَتْرُكْهُ يَلْهَثْ.
If you chase the dog and engage him, his tongue is always hanging out, panting. And if you leave him alone, he's also just sitting there, his tongue is panting. Meaning, when you show him dunya, he runs after it. When he can't get dunya, his occupation day and night is just how to get more dunya, how to get more pleasure, how to get more of material and physical, and not the hereafter.
ذلك مثل القوم الذين كذبوا بآياتنا.
This is the example of those who deny our signs, whom we show our signs, they believe in it, and then they deny it.
فقصص القصص لعلهم يتفكرون.
So tell them this qasas, O Prophet. Tell them this story so that they can reflect on it and say, there were those before me who had higher spiritual states, but they fell because of this Hubbud Dunya. Umar ibn Sa'd was a man who had a mark of sajda on his forehead. That's how much he used to worship Allah. He used to get up in the middle of the night and pray Salatul Layl. He didn't come to Karbala because of his hatred for Ahlul Bayt. He came to Karbala because of his love for the world. He had this thing about the land of Ray. He wanted to be the governor of Ray. From 3rd Muharram until the 8th night of Muharram, every single night he sat with Imam Hussein face to face, having discussions late into the night. He was trying to find a way where he could get Ray but not kill Hussein. And Imam Hussein said to him, give up Ray, I will give you a better land than Ray. And when he finally said, I cannot give it up, to Imam Hussein, Imam Hussein said, I tell you this with the knowledge I have, you will not eat even one seed from Ray. And that's exactly what happened, because when he went back, he got nothing. You will never find a person who is deeply, deeply obsessed in love with the Ahlul Bayt and obsessed with dunya. They just don't mix. It is oil and water. You cannot put these two places together. You see, the beautiful thing about this is when Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about himself and the hypocrites, he says, Ana ya'subul mu'mineen. I am the leader of the mu'mineen. Wal malu ya'subul munafiqun. And wealth or world, dunya, is the leader of the hypocrites. Meaning you can't have Ali bin Abi Talib and dunya. You have to choose between one of the two. And that is why you have all these ahadith that somebody would come to Amir al-Mu'mineen and say, he would stand in front of him in Masjid al-Kufa and say, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I swear by Allah, I love you. And Ali bin Abi Talib would say to him, are you sure you love me? He would say, yes, O Ali, my heart overflows with your mahabba, with your love. He said, in that case, be ready for trials and suffering in this world. Because by Allah, bala comes running to my Shia like horses galloping down a mountain or a river. When the ice melts on the mountain, the river flows down to this world.
Muhammad, Ya Rasul Allah, Ya Habib Allah, Ya Khalil Allah, Muhammad.
Welcome back, dear listeners. So we were talking about how the selfishness and how being self-centered and having conceit and being conceited, these are all aspects which are the origin of inner diseases and evil. When we start to give importance to the self, the lower self, the whims, the desires, you know, the fancies, the imaginations, then we end up running into trouble, especially when it comes to spiritual diseases. And so because the self and this idea of me is the most important thing, in modern day language and in the West, it is known as humanism, where the center of everything is the human being. It is the me and the I. Whereas when we look at Islam and we look at all Abrahamic faiths, we will find that the center is not the me. Actually, the center is the Almighty Allah, the Exalted and the Blessed. And this is what is Ubudiyya in essence. Ubudiyya is where the individual loses themselves and all that remains is the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah. Now, of course, in its fullest meaning and in its greatest level is where you will find this insani kamil, or the perfect human being, or the complete human being, or the comprehensive or holistic human being, right? And the manifestations of this insani kamil, this perfect human being, is at the top, first and foremost, the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him, and his holy household, and after him, of course, the infallible and immaculate imams, peace and blessings upon them, all the Ahlul Bayt, the other messengers of Allah, the other awliya of Allah, and farther down the line, of course, you have great esteemed scholars of Islam from the past and in the present, you know, such as, of course, Ayatollah Shahabadi, or Imam Khomeini, or in the present time, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. These are individuals that have achieved a certain level of completion and a certain level of sacredness, right? Because, of course, they have been able to do what we are talking about in essence, which is to destroy the self as much as possible, get away from this self-centeredness, this me, which of course is the origin of spiritual diseases. And inshallah, we can level up our ubudiyya, our service, our worship, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
سواه لا تخالطه الظنون ولا العيون تراه الله جل في علاه هو أنسي وملاذي أحتمي بحماه حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله حسبنا الله حسبنا
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Jenin, Palestinians are forced to rent second homes as their main residences are regularly targeted by the Zionist regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the first part. Middle East Eye wrote, during each Israeli incursion into the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank, 53-year-old Zahra Mahmoud Mary gathers whatever clothes and essential items she can grab. With her three daughters and husband, she leaves the family home on Mayhuba Street, located in the heart of the camp, and heads to the Shohada neighborhood on the outskirts of Jenin in search for safety. There, the family rent a small house using savings and the little income they have, which provides temporary safety from Israeli occupation forces. They stay there, transfixed to news reports, waiting for the announcement that the Israelis have left so they can return home. Mary told Middle East Eye, It's not easy to leave our home and camp. We are not running away, but it's a hard choice forced upon us. Mary's neighborhood is the focal point of the Zionist regime raids in Jenin, and even her home near the Ansar Mosque has been targeted multiple times. During the initial incursions into the camp in July 2023, Mary's home was damaged and her family endured 3 difficult days with Israeli regime troops stationed around the house the entire time. Following the start of Israel's war on Gaza, the family's situation worsened. The Zionist regime forces blew up her husband's brother's homes, which were adjacent to her own, and caused further damage to his in December 2023. Mary recalled the final straw in June, which led to her decision not to stick around for the next Israeli incursion into her neighborhood. The family home came under heavy gunfire, and she said that her family experienced hours of terror. After more than an hour of direct shooting at the room where we were gathered, I risked my life and put my head out of the window, shouting that there were children in the house, she said, adding, only then did they allow us to leave. When Middle East Eye spoke to Mary, bullet marks and other damage were visible throughout the family home. Windows were covered with plastic to replace the broken glass, walls were destroyed, and the water system was no longer working. Amidst the fog of the Israeli regime assaults, Mary and her husband, Maher, could barely remember which incursion caused which damage. Maher has been unemployed since the war on Gaza began, and their eldest son cannot find steady work. Despite this, the family decided to rent a home outside of the neighborhood to ensure their safety, adding an extra financial burden to their many struggles, Mary said. We were left alone, without protection or support. What we hear in the media is different from reality. We even have to buy drinking water. Buying water may seem straightforward, but for a family of 6 with no regular income, the costs add up. Sometimes the family are forced to forego this luxury and risk drinking water contaminated with waste. More than 3,000 residents of the Jenin refugee camp have sought permanent housing alternatives outside of the camp, so they have a place to escape to in the event of an Israeli regime incursion. Some have even left the camp permanently. The number is likely to rise, as the Zionist regime shows no sign of letting up the number of raids it is carrying out, with Palestinians documenting more than 80 incursions into the camp in 18 months. Some of these lasted several days, the longest being what the Zionist regime called Operation Summer Camps in August, during which more than 7,000 Palestinians were forced to leave the camp. This disruption, along with the culminating physical damage from the incursions and pre-existing high unemployment in the camp, has led to a significant economic burden on the more than 17,000 Palestinians living there. Nahida Salah, 44, and her 5 children have been unable to leave the camp because of prohibitive expense. For over 2 years, Salah has lived in the damaged neighborhood after separating from her husband in Jordan and returning to settle with her children and family in the camp. The house she rents is located in the heart of a neighborhood that is consistently targeted by the Zionist regime forces during incursions. Salah can barely afford the minimal rent she pays, and if she wished to move outside the camp or to its outskirts, the rent would be double, she said. Even my family, who I turned to after my separation, can barely manage under the current circumstances. Middle East Eye accompanied Salah and her daughters, Sham 7 and Shata 10, who seemed very attached to their mother. She said their psychological state has been unstable because of the trauma they experienced during the incursions. The sounds of bombings and continuous gunfire during these raids have left them with a constant sense of fear. She said, I don't know how I will manage once the rain starts. The situation is disastrous.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hezbollah continues to pound Israel's military bases, settlements and forces with missiles and drones in retaliation for the regime's aggression against Lebanon. The Yemeni army says it has carried out a new operation against Israel, hitting a vital target in Eilat port with drones. Iran warns that it will take new measures if the International Atomic Energy Agency issues a resolution against the country in its upcoming meeting.